And we're rolling.
What's going on, everybody, and welcome back to the Dead Man's Coffee Club. I'm Anthony.
And I'm Tyler.
Tyler's here with me. We're going to talk to you for a little while. How's it going, brother?
I'm good, man. Well, I don't sound good. I sound like a weirdo. Got boogers in my head, but otherwise, I'm great.
Nice.
How are you?
Outside of shaking off the sleep, I'm doing all right. And we're looking at
4:40 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Getting after it. Yeah, so everything's good. I've got one more day of work this week, and have my Sunday with my girls. I had Thursday off this week.
How was that, man?
It was really good. We were able to pack in a lot of just family time and activities on that day that I think made a lot of difference. It's, you know, the kind of stuff that after the fact, you look at it and you're like, man, I need more of that in my life. We went strawberry picking, and
that's the best.
I mean, it was hot and there were gnats out and it was gross, but it was really nice to kind of get out of our element and just, you know, be together, even if it was for a little while. And then I was able to take my daughter out on a donut date, which is kind of one of those things that she really enjoys and asks for a lot. And in Albany, unlike Decatur, where we were living before, where there are little donut boutiques or, you know, whatnot, where
kind of like the coffee situation is what you're saying.
It's just like the coffee situation, man. Our gourmet donut shop is known as Krispy Kreme.
Hey.
And while it is delicious in its own way, it is not anything to call home about. So she and I in the afternoon got together, and she asked my wife if we could go out, and she was like, well, you gotta talk to your dad. She came outside. I'm sitting there reading with my probably seventh cup of coffee for that day, and it's like, Dad, I have a great idea. That's her thing. Like, that's how she tries to rope us in these days, is by pinning it as a great idea. So she'll come out and she'll be like, Dad, I have a great idea. Why don't we go on a donut date? And I just looked at her, and, you know, sometimes I'm just apprehensive to say that it's a good idea, you know, just because I know she's trying to get something out of the mix. But this time around, I was like, you know what? It is a good idea. Let's go. Let's just, me and you, hop in the car, go down the road. Let's just have a donut and let's sit and let's talk. And I brought my notebook and my pen just in case.
Yeah.
And what it ended up turning into is, in this notebook, I have a short story that I wrote for her. And anytime she sees this notebook, she's like, my story's in there. Yeah, your story's in here. We're in the middle of the donut shop, we're eating and sitting, and she's like, can you read it to me? All right, cool. So, sitting in the middle of Krispy Kreme on a donut date, and I'm reading her this kid's story that I wrote for. It was a good day. It was a good day, and yeah, just I think back to it, and it makes me long for more moments like that. Like, even, you know, those small, you know, moments that you really tend to overlook are the ones that really make, you know, lasting memories and really build a stronger foundation in relationships. Even with my daughter, like I find that having those times builds a stronger relationship with her. So I was really, really excited about that.
Dude, that is so awesome.
Yeah.
Lately, our oldest has taken to say, I have a compromise. He learned the word compromise.
Yes.
So he's like,
what a kid.
Let's compromise. Let's make a compromise. I'm like, dude, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to happen. But that's really cool. That's, I mean, people aren't aware, right? This is a story that was written because there's not enough stories.
I am a writer by first passion, and I wrote a fantasy novel, and I'm working on some other complimentary stuff, but, you know, bedtime comes around, and story time comes right before bedtime, and, you know, we read a lot of books that have a lot of white faces in them, and I, you know, there's nothing wrong with little white kids in books.
I mean, you know, we have white faces, man.
Yeah, it is what it is. But at the end of the day, even at, you know, going on 4 years old, I have been kind of bombarded with questions concerning her skin color, or
by adults.
No, by her.
Okay.
She, like I said, going on 4 years old, is already kind of inquiring about why, you know, why the characters maybe don't look like her, or you know, even in just day to days, is starting to see, you know, me as a white parent, and her mom is, you know, a mixed woman, and then going out and seeing other parents and of other kids. And like last night, for instance, we were at a little shindig, and there was a white couple who was fostering an infant. He was half black and half Filipino. Mm-hmm. And my daughter put it together that, you know, okay,
they didn't create that baby.
You know, that's, how does this work?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like she's kind of trying to go over those things in her head, and she's identifying things. And, you know, identifying people by their skin color. So, you know, to kind of address that and to give a little bit more representation to what I've seen in kids' books, because I think it's important that she sees kids in stories who look like her and kids in stories who have parents like hers. Just so that she realizes, like, hey, this is normal and this is okay.
Yeah.
And it's great for you to be you. And just because the character in the book is black, or just because the character in the book is white, that doesn't you know, mean that you have to lean one way or the other. But that now you have representation of your own, that you can identify with somebody who looks like you too. So, you know, because she kind of has that awareness now, I'm trying to kind of cater a little bit more to helping her to develop her own identity.
Yeah.
in the healthiest way that I know how.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of part of it. And so, I saw that there wasn't a lot of that representation. There weren't a lot of, like, strong-willed representations of children either. My daughter is very, very strong-willed. And so I wanted to be able to showcase that, but also showcase it in a very positive way, you know, instead of the mischievous, troublemaking child.
Yeah.
Somebody who, on the other hand, has a little bit of determination. So I wrote this thing, and I'm sitting there reading it to her. Yeah, we had a good time. Like, anytime she sees that notebook, she's like, "Is that my story?" And I know the following question is, "Well, can you read it to me?" Yeah. And
that's so cool.
We're in the process now. Hopefully, we're gonna get it illustrated. Hopefully, maybe we're gonna publish it, and hopefully, it helps a lot of people out.
Dude, that's so rad. It's so. There's so many directions we can go now with this this conversation, and just to be mindful that you need to be headed out the door at 6, so it's 4:50, so we will make sure we're doing a good job today. Yeah. But
it's all good.
There's so many directions I think we could go, because
what are you thinking?
I don't even know where to start, but one of the places that we can start is because we'll have a little sex ed kind of conversation here because it's important and it doesn't get talked about enough. One of the most important concepts that I teach in sex ed, and one of the only things that when I teach as a black and white issue, is consent. And it's something that I know that when I took sex ed, or I took health, the guy was a nice guy, but he for sure did not focus on this. Like, we focused on gonorrhea and all these, like, diseases and, like, whatever, but, like, for sure did not have a conversation about consent, did not really have some of these important conversations. But one of the, and I'm thankful because in my first year teaching, I worked with some pretty dope people my first year. We went through some shit together, tried to unionize together, had some messed up experiences together. But this one lady, she had just had a child that year. I think this is who told me about it. She's like, "Dude, you gotta check out this video. It's called Cup of Tea." I was like, "Cup of Tea? What are you talking about?" And so I watch this video, and it's a stick figure British video, if you watch the unclean version. And it teaches consent and initiating sex as a cup of tea. So you wouldn't give a cup of tea to someone who's unconscious. You wouldn't give a cup of tea to someone who didn't want a cup of tea. You wouldn't force it down their throat. You wouldn't do all these things with a hot cup of tea, right? If someone wanted a cup of tea last week, that doesn't mean they want a cup of tea today, right? It's not a, like, lifelong invitation for a cup of tea.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, see that.
And the initial version has a bunch of swear words, which for kids makes it even more, or youth, right? It makes it even more impact. Like, they remember it more because of the F word and whatnot.
Right.
But I've since found a clean version. And the other day, we were in the gym, and, like, the whole school was there for whatever reason. And someone was asking, like, what's going on, blah, blah, blah. I was like, "Oh, we're talking about cup of tea." And the kid, I taught him last year, and the kid was like, "Bet, I remember that," right?
Yeah.
And the reason I'm telling all of this is because stories, right, metaphors in this case, but stories in general, have a way of teaching us things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In a way that, I'm gonna Hopefully I don't go too deep here.
Dude,
but
you're fine.
Shoot. One of my biggest frustrations with education in general is that we focus on memorization instead of learning, right?
Yeah.
And the difference between memorization and learning, right, is you'll forget shit that you memorize, right?
Yeah.
I can memorize
it's not transferable.
I can memorize the first 20 digits of pi, and unless it has a purpose, right? Like, unless there's some significant meaning to me, I'm gonna forget it, right? I can memorize the symptoms of a specific STI or the symptom or the, like, whatever. But if I understand a story or a concept or a principle in its application in the real world, then I've learned it. And when you learn something, you've experienced it to some degree, and a story helps you experience it even as a third party, then you don't forget it. It doesn't go away. It might take a second to recall it, but it's there forever.
Yeah.
And so when you were talking about the story and your daughter, that is because... And this is why it can go a million directions. Race in America is a very interesting thing, right? And a lot of people like to put people in nice little boxes that make sense for them, right?
Yeah.
Instead of addressing the fact that it's probably a little bit more complex than you are, you know, saying. And just because someone has the appearance of being black on the surface, that doesn't necessarily mean that's their entire identity. It doesn't mean that that's how they identify, right? Just like, you know, it can go a bunch of different ways. My wife and I were talking about how crazy transracialism is, and that weird lady who...
Some of Rachel Dolezal.
Yeah, whatever. But...
That great American.
Oh, my God. But that it's... that having stories that allow young people and adults to learn, right, what it could be like to just have a different perspective, right? Because in this different perspective, you're able to appreciate other people and their perspective. Because, I mean... Obviously, race is a huge thing, but it's also not like it doesn't make someone not a human to be like to look different than you. So, you know, a story that invites people and invites your daughter to see herself in a story, which is far too uncommon,
and even more interesting too. Like while you're on that point, is imagine the, and I'm speaking hopefully, you know the. You know, maybe...
Bro, it's going to be a wild success.
Yeah, maybe, hell, you know, do a school tour. Read it to all the kids. Oh, but, yeah. But, you know, what would be so cool for me is, what if this book actually gets on a bookshelf? And what if a white parent or a black parent to... a white or black child is able to pick this book up, and then it starts a conversation with that child because, well, guess what? This little girl's parents don't look like my parents.
Yeah.
And so not only is it good for my daughter,
it's good for
and
parents.
For kids like her, because it gives them a sense of, you know, identity found in literature, but it also creates a conversation for other people, you know, to have with their children that, well, hey, you know, not everyone's parents look like your parents, you know, and that's cool.
Yeah.
That's fine.
And not everyone's, like, because I've my super son is not my biological son, right?
Right.
And,
right.
There's a fear that I, you know, carry with me from time to time, depending on this scenario, that someone's gonna be like, just try and intervene because they're nosy as fuck or whatever.
Yeah.
and that people are so locked into, like, as a society, we're so locked into that if this, like, because people ask my wife all the time if our youngest is her daughter, or her son, if she's watching the bit, like, because he's very light and he, you know, they don't look similar enough yet, yeah, in other people's opinion. But to have a book that starts a conversation, yeah, that this thing is bigger, right? This world is a lot bigger than your perspective wherever you grew up, right? Because, you know, I'll bring it back to my own life, right? I was very fortunate to... Wow, that's a big-ass bug.
You need to handle that.
No, it's outside.
Okay.
It just flew up to the window, though. But I was very fortunate to go to a real... At the time, it was not the greatest school system, but it...
I was there, too.
But it was an integrated school system. And a school system that bust. So while the city... for the most part, residentially, was still segregated, right? I mean, unofficially, right? Everything's unofficially, there's parts of Kalamazoo that are more integrated than others as far as where people live. But for the most part, right, neighborhoods, you can almost... Like, you can say a neighborhood and then say it. Chance of someone of color living there is pretty low.
Yeah.
Right? And so being in the school system that I was, right, gave me a particular perspective on the world.
Yeah.
Right? Like, these are my teammates. These are my classmates. These are people, and they look different than me, but, like, I'm gonna get down and like defend these people and have conversations with people. And like, you look at a lunchroom at a school of 1500 kids where it's 50-50 black white, and yes, there are segregated sections of it, but then there's also sections of it that are integrated, and the conversations that can happen there. Sorry, last thing, and then I'll stop talking about it. Well, not stop talking about it, but like,
I want to touch on.
Yeah, but like, so it would have helped my parents, right? Because my parents came from a high school in Michigan City, Indiana, that had a handful of black folks there, maybe, right? And I don't know how many black folks live in Michigan City, but I know it's definitely not as many as Kalamazoo, and it's for sure not as many as Detroit. And that experience, their perspective, has made it hard for us to communicate on particular issues because they couldn't understand.
Yeah.
Like what it, they couldn't understand, right? Hop in though. Go for it.
Yeah. Dude. Yeah, so I think back to my childhood, and, you know, just like you, I grew up dirt poor, like trailer park poor. And as a result, I went to schools in an area of town that were predominantly African American. You know, Albany is already a majority African American city.
Yeah.
So even, you know, and that's surprising to me because
Albany's where you live right now.
What's that?
Albany's where you live right now, right?
Yeah, yeah. I look at like local businesses and things like that, and I wish that I saw more black faces.
Yeah.
And, you know, in areas like that, or in government, things like that, and you know we're inching towards that, but not as swiftly as I'd like. But you know, I grew up and I went to, not like our school system was ever great anywhere in the city, but you know, on the east side of town where I was raised, you know, it was a majority African American, and so you know I went to these schools, and I never really thought much about looking different than anybody else. But I will tell you that being raised in a household where I was the stepson to an African-American man, and seeing, you know, kind of the looks that people would give when my dad and I would just go and run an errand.
Right.
You know, and it took me the better part of my adulthood to even find a solid foundation for my identity. Like, I wrestled with that growing up, being raised by someone who didn't share my skin color, but at the same time, growing up in this household, I found a large part of my identity in, and you know, my parents, you know, they're just this, they're a different generation, and they never really talked about, you know, about it or addressed it with me. Like, it was my younger brother, you know, certainly got the talk because he's mixed, but me, like, it was just like, all right, go, you know, figure this shit out. You know, I didn't ever really, there was never a time where my mom and dad sat down with me and were like, hey, here's the situation. You don't have to bend one way or the other. You know, I want you to be you and to be happy and to be comfortable and confident in who you are and where you've come from and how you've been raised. You know, and I wrestled with that for the majority of my life. You know, I never wrestled with my dad being my dad. I never wrestled with the fact that, you know, there's a black man raising me, as much as I wrestled with who am I amidst this kind of what I perceived at the time as an abnormality coming from where I came from.
Right.
You know, how do I exist and live and find who I am, knowing that I've been shaped so much by a culture that's not mine? By inheritance, but more by adoption. And, you know, kind of how do I reconcile that with my apparent whiteness?
Yeah.
And also, you know, like, my mom is friggin' Filipino, so it's like, well, then how do I reconcile that with being the son of an immigrant?
Yeah.
Like, it was just, there were so many, like, different things, and, like, I wish that there were more narratives, I think, that helped me to navigate that and make more sense of it, so that I didn't have identity crisis into my 20s. Yeah, that would have been helpful, but, you know, I'm hoping that, knowing what I know now, kind of being more confident in who I am and what I believe, and raising a mixed race child, that I can at least take what I've learned along the way and come alongside my daughter with tools and resources and stories and things like that.
For sure.
And help her to just be comfortable in her skin. Like, I wrote something a while back that, and I might have mentioned it on the show before, but it was kind of like an open, like a short open letter to my daughter. You know, your mom is black and white, and your dad is, you know, white and Filipino, and you are, you know, a bit of all of that, and you don't have to pick a side.
Yeah.
You know, and I want her to know that, that yes, there are realities, different realities for different people, but at the end of the day, you, I want you to feel confident and comfortable and not having to deny part of yourself, but to acknowledge the big picture, and, you know, to be an advocate where you need to be an advocate, but just being conscious and comfortable in your skin.
Yeah.
Because I know that's difficult. Coming from someone who had so much trouble being comfortable in his skin for the majority of his life, I get that. And there are other things, they're bigger things that, you know, need our attention and our concern than us having to blindly figure this thing out for ourselves.
Yeah, no, that's that is powerful stuff, sir. And we had kind of briefly mentioned it before the show, but I think and I wasn't sure if I was going to bring it up, but I think I'm going to read it now. So, because it's all the more freaking relevant. So, this is a quote. This is a quote, and then I'll give context to it. My people will sleep for 100 years, but when they awake, it will be the artists who give them their spirits back. And that is by Louis Riel, who is a Métis guy. For those who don't know, because this kind of has more context where I'm at, as far as the parts of the country and world, Métis folks are indigenous folks from Canada, First Nation folks from Canada, but they're mixed between Native women typically and European trappers back initially, and then kind of a people came from this. And I think the reason I thought of that quote earlier when we were talking is that I think that this kind of lends itself into story, into art and creative endeavors that can communicate things in a way that, like, even your fantasy, like fantasy novels and things, how these things can communicate things and invite folks into a conversation, even of just thinking, right, that helps adjust models of how they view the world, right? That helps them put on a different lens to look at the world through. And for your children's book, right, it doesn't have to, I mean, like, it, you don't have to tell your whole life story for that to be a part of the story, you know? In that, right, the characters can grapple with things that only their author could fully understand, but that invites folks who maybe look a different way or a particular way, or who look similar and have a similar background, like, give help with that conversation. And I guess, I don't know, what are your thoughts on that? Because I think the creative endeavors can, even like this podcast is semi-creative, things like that can kind of help, as it says, give the spirit back, right? Like, help the soul come out, which I think so many people wander through life searching for, but they search for it in these kind of technical things instead of, like, they're almost like hard to touch kind of things that invite you into a different life.
I think you know, just hearing that, like, I'm gonna touch on something it's from my, like, theological background, but I think that the overarching picture helps to make sense of this. And so you know, you you will hear the term Imago Dei kind of tossed around from time to time.
What does
Imago
that mean?
Imago Dei, the image of God.
Okay.
So each of us is an image bearer. We each bear the image of God.
Interesting.
And, on the earth to one another, and as a result of, you know, sin, so to speak, falling away from an intimate knowledge of God, that image is marred. Okay, so we are image bearers. So let's look at it in you know, real terms, like, let's say, like a mirror, right?
Yeah.
So we're all mirrors, and anytime I see you, I see me.
Right.
And anytime I, you know, I see you, I see God. But what's happened is, because of sin, that image has been marked. So let's, you know, let's set a match, you know, right next to that mirror, and you've got this smudge on it where there was a fire.
Right.
Let's crack that mirror. And next thing you know, well, I'm looking at your mirror and your mirror's cracked. You're looking at my mirror and my mirror has this huge smoke mark on it.
Right.
And so the Imago Dei, the image of God, is still present, but it has been, kind of tainted. And so what we're in search of and what we're trying to do now is we're trying to restore that mirror. We're trying to wipe off and buff and clean that smoke smudge on that mirror. We're trying to restore and, you know, remake that broken mirror. We're trying to fix the cracks. And so, you know, over time, instead of seeing the blemishes and you know, whatnot, we see this perfect image again. And I think that's kind of going back. I think that's the beautiful thing about, you know, that quote and about the use of art as a medium, to, talk about, identity and, just, you know, yeah, things of that nature. That what it does is it puts a mirror in front of us, and it presents an image that we should strive to attain, and it shows us the flaws in the image that we bear.
Yeah.
And gives us an opportunity to fix those things, to restore those things, and to work together. So that's kind of one of those, I would kind of put it that way, that,
so the art helps you fix your mirror.
The art helps us to restore restore perfect vision, so to speak. And, you know, granted, in our finite capability, we're probably not going to get it perfect.
Yeah.
But it gives us a reference to strive towards.
Right.
In terms of building, rebuilding, restoring, and preserving. And it, you know, it often tells of a larger human narrative. Sometimes it will tell of a specific narrative, but I think that at the end of the day, it all kind of gets back to this overarching big, like, meta narrative that, like, it gives us points of reference to see where we are maybe lacking or not paying attention to things, and gives us an opportunity to start the conversations, to wrestle with our own thoughts and habits and, you know, whatnot, and make something better. Make some, you know, polish it up, just like you would polish that mirror with that smudge on it.
Yeah, I think there was something you said, but it kind of resonated with me, that it's No, the exact words you used slipped my mind, but to be present with the, like, I'm gonna try and circle this back here is what I'm gonna try and do. So stories and art have this beautiful opportunity to help us see others and refine our own, in your terms, image, or what, to make ourselves work towards, back towards the image of God, right?
Yeah.
Somewhat. Okay. And I think art has a profound, whether that's literature, whether that's visuals, whether that's music, dance, theater, all right, like there's the gamut of creativity is crazy. But I wonder, right? I wonder if the reason, or part of the reason that art can do that, is because it invites us to just be right there. Just be right there. And to circle all the way back to your donut, like having a donut date with your daughter, or a cup of coffee with your wife, right? I know that's like one of the most sacred things, and I say that with no disrespect. It's just something that's written all over my arms, that every day and every moment is sacred, right? When we're able to change that perspective, so that these moments, right, like the moment with your daughter, or the two days ago doing the lawn with my son, my super son, these moments become these profound opportunities to polish the glass or the mirror, or to, you know, put the resin in and start sanding and smoothing it to try and fix the crack. It becomes this opportunity to put the art in motion, right? I don't know, I think so when we were like, what are we talking about this week? It was like donuts. Anthony was like, what the hell are you talking about?
The simple pleasures in life. And you know, like, I thought we were gonna kinda take a
I did not expect any of this conversation.
No, I didn't. I was certainly, and it's just because of the way that my brain works, but I was like, okay, cool, like we're gonna talk about this in terms of ritual and how important ritual is, and you know, even, you know, from like a non-religious context, just how important it is to do stuff, and to gain and retain from said stuff. But no, this is excellent, and I think that it's so important, like to have moments and experiences and times and sacred, you know, space, like all of these things, I think, require and kind of beckon for our attention, and we're oftentimes reluctant to give it the attention it really, really needs.
Yeah, because
like you said, you know, with donuts, it's like, oh, it's just a donut.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
It's so much bigger than a donut.
Like, yeah.
It's so much bigger than the couple of dollars I spent on the two cups of coffee. It's me sitting across from this woman, and having an opportunity to reflect, being invited into conversation, having an experience. Like, this is a sacred moment. And I think it's something that, like, we have to take seriously.
Like,
it gives us a little bit more urgency. And I think this talk is something for me, for you,
anyone
listening, to just kind of like rattle us out of this kind of complacency of just doing shit, to seeing the beauty and the importance of every moment, you know, that you spend, like, actively and intentionally with another human being or with yourself. You know, those are experiences that shape us and that center us or recenter us.
100%. I mean, I think it's, I think, and maybe at no time in history has there been more of an opportunity for folks to not do that, right? Like, it's so easy to turn on the television. It's so easy to scroll through your phone.
Oh my God.
And to do, and like, and to do it under the guise that, no, I'm connecting with other people, which is like, it's true. Like,
kind of, yeah.
Like, Anthony and I messaged through Instagram. I messaged with folks.
Without the internet, we wouldn't know each other.
No, not at all.
Smartphones.
Right.
And that kind of interaction.
Yeah, without smartphones, this podcast wouldn't happen. Anthony's talking into an iPhone. I'm recording this podcast on an iPhone.
But here's the thing. Here's the kicker. What are we doing right now? We're having a conversation. It is this time on Saturday morning when neither one of us wanted to be up. Let's face it. I mean, I text you at like
4:08 is when I saw it.
4:08. Yeah, well, like, I text you and my alarm went off. I had a late night and I had to be at work today. And I'm just like, I'm rolling out of bed. And I'm like, are we doing this? Yeah. Yeah, we're doing it. All right, cool. I'm up. You know? It is intentional. It's sacred. It's something that we have kind of dedicated and devoted this time slot in the morning to having this dialogue, regardless what we talk about, even if we have considered what we're going to talk about.
Right.
But we have both acknowledged and accepted that, hey, even if this podcast only reaches the 5 people that are listening,
it has value to us.
It has infinite value to you and I.
And because, to our kids and, you know,
and to our, yeah, to our kids, to our marriages, to our wives. Like, it has infinite value because we are growing from these conversations. We're learning from one another, things that we typically, or things that otherwise we wouldn't have learned or sought after. This is a time where we've like intentionally, kind of, you know, started this interaction for our betterment. Like, and like you say, you know, to be a better human and to build a better world.
Yeah,
that's the goal, and I think that's what makes it so special and what makes it sacred. It's because you are improving yourself for the sake of everyone else.
And like literally everyone, right? Like obviously literally it starts everyone. With like our kids and our wives and our families, right?
But how does that? Yeah, like you don't just take that with you know, to your family.
No.
Like, people at work, the kids that you teach,
right,
see that, hear those stories, see those things, and they're challenged by it. Like, I can't tell you the amount of, like, times I've had to not necessarily justify my conversations with my wife while I'm at work, but I'm just asked, like, you know, y'all treat each other like that, y'all talk to one another that way. You ask her if you can go somewhere,
right?
Like, I mean, just simple stuff like that,
right?
Like, it opens up these conversations with other people that you know, otherwise wouldn't be had, and hopefully have a positive impact, that, you know, they see a healthy-ish relationship between a man and his wife, that they see a dude who just wants to do his work and wants to do it really well because he really wants to get home to his kid and to his wife, and he just wants to invest time. And it's like, man, maybe I didn't have that growing up, or man, maybe I've got a kid and maybe I don't even anticipate getting home and seeing that kid the way that this guy wants to see his kid.
Yeah.
What's going on with me? And it brings back that illustration of the mirrors. It puts that my mirror in front of this person's mirror, and I'm reflecting something to this person
right.
that they otherwise don't see, that now invites them to improve upon this.
Exactly.
And vice versa.
Yeah, exactly. And it goes on forever, but I think when you come to a moment with some intentionality, that it can, any moment can become that moment, right? Watering a plant can become that moment. Pouring your coffee, having your morning coffee, or reading, or whatever, like that all can become that moment. That's to use Riel's words, can give the spirit back, right? Can breathe new life into folks. Can, you know, polish the deal, whatever. And that I just think it's an easy thing to miss, right? Mm-hmm. It's an easy thing to say, you know what? I'm making my money. I'm like, I got all these followers. All these people like my pictures. Like, I'm doing all this great stuff. And it's like, for sure, you probably are. But imagine what could happen if we're a little bit more present, we bring a little bit more intentionality to those moments.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm with it.
Imagine. Just, it's crazy. So, yeah, man. Well, that was okay. It was kind of cool. Sorry. You know, we'll put it in the binders with the binders, and then we'll probably burn this shit in a couple years, and, you know, I'm just kidding. This is,
it's on the internet now. We can burn it all we want. Yeah. Somebody's gonna find it.
Somebody somewhere. All right, senor. Well, so you have a little extra time to prepare for your day.
Nice.
Because my day is just filled with chores and family.
Hopefully my day is a little shorter and I can fill it with those things too. But if not, then I'm fully prepared to just do good work and come home and enjoy my girls when the time comes. But I hope that you are able to enjoy your time and your chores and think about all the stuff we've already talked about today.
Oh yeah, man.
Add that to your day.
Oh yeah. Mowing a lawn is a perfect time to think, for sure.
Oh yeah, it's really meditative.
Our lawn is a big one, so it takes a while. All right, folks. Well, this is, I can't even remember. Is this 8? I think this is episode
this is 8
of the Dead Man's Coffee Club. I heard something the other day that if you pass 6, you're on your way.
Yeah. Look out, world.
Look out, world. All 3 people who listen.
Lost us 2 listeners.
My bad. 5. Sorry. Anthony's count is better, more accurate than mine. Thank you for listening, and hopefully, our conversation is just an invitation into this bigger conversation for you all. Have a great day, folks.
All right, guys. Thank you.
All right, man.